Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to today's show. I decided to be here with you. I'm broadcasting live out of Kansas City, Missouri, on the Missouri side, Kansas City. And welcome all you new listeners and those that may be joining us on a regular basis, as well as our new-time listeners. Excited to have you here. I'm looking over the kind of rainy weather here of Kansas, nervous that I could be stuck in a tornado. Gosh, and our hearts and prayers and condolences go out to the families this last week that just went through some terrible storms here in the Midwest. So being out here in Kansas, they're talking about it, of course. So out here speaking at the National Private Lenders Association and Prima Association Conference, and seeing some familiar faces from clients for many years that have just dropped in here for this conference, and I'm here. So if you're in the Kansas City area, come on over. We're at the convention center today and tomorrow. Anyway, well, welcome to another show about saving taxes, building wealth, and trying to bring it all together and live the American dream. I'm right there out there with you, trying to bring it all together every week, working hard and just loving this great country we live in. I'm excited for today's show. We've got Randy Lubke, a regular contributor to the show. He's going to be joining us here closer to the bottom of the hour and talking about Social Security and other options and strategies, tricks on this retirement topic. Now, I know it sounds a little dry. You know, gosh, and if, you know, some people think taxes are dry. We know that that's not the case. But with Social Security, we think, oh, I guess, you know, there's not much to know, or is it even going to be there? Is it worth even talking about? Well, folks, there are some really amazing strategies related in and around Social Security, and you may think it's a boring topic, but if you're 50 years or older, you're wondering what's next, what's the strategy, what's the trick. So we're going to be talking about that. So for my younger crowd, this may be one where you sock this information away and maybe share it with a friend or a parent, aunt, uncle, grandparent, someone a little older if you're terribly young, but I think you're going to find this helpful. So at least stick around here for our initial tax and legal tips that we have each week, and then if you don't think Social Security applies to you, you can bug out. But we're excited to have Randy Lubke joining us here shortly. Now, as usual, we've got to make a few announcements here with the newsletter that went out last night. We've got the major deadline of just payroll. For any of you that have S corporations, this is the first quarter of 2014 payroll reporting. So we need to kind of get an estimate as to your first quarter and what your draws were, and let's get your payroll report off. I'm doing mine as well. I just sent it off a couple weeks ago. What a pain. But it's going to save me a lot of money in the long run. So any of you that are creating ordinary income, you know what I'm talking about. We've got to do that little payroll report, and the deadline is Wednesday this week, so don't forget. Other than that, it's all of us that extended our tax returns. It's just time to get paperwork done and keep working away on all the different pieces and parts of good bookkeeping for last year and this year, getting our books in order. So anyway, that's kind of the major deadline to discuss, and then a couple good articles. We're going to talk to Matt Sorensen here shortly. I think he's one of our tipsters today. He may bring up his blog. If not, he can at least mention it. I wrote about investing with family, friends, and church members. Be cautious. I think it's wonderful to partner with others, and especially friends and family, and that's okay. But we got to do it wisely and cautiously, making sure we dot all our I's and cross our T's and get it in writing. And talk about the worst-case scenario. Some of those uncomfortable conversations, it's better you have them at the outset than later on when things get ugly. So check out the article. If you're partnering with others, I think you'll find it really, really helpful. I also talked about job searching costs in the weekly message, and anybody that's on the road looking for a new job and some of the expenses you might incur, and again, you might have a family member or friend that's in that process right now, that little section on the weekly message could be very helpful. So check it out, and hopefully you, if you're not getting the newsletter, send us an email, send me an email, and we'll make sure that you're on the list and getting the blog each week with the important announcements. Now, without further ado, we're going to go to one of our tipsters. Every week we have someone join us from our legal or accounting team, and the first to call in today that was Does Early Bird Gets the Worm? We're excited to have Brian Brown with us. He's a regular contributor, just a huge benefit to our clients around the country. He's a partner here at Keller and Ayer CPAs, and we sure love Brian. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. But once again, every time I come on the show, you start talking about old people stuff. It's really irritating.
You know, it's true. I did not plan the Social Security conversation to be today when you were on. How ironic.
How ironic. Thanks a lot. Yeah, because I'm the old man of the firm. You know, you don't have to talk about old people stuff. Gee, money.
Yeah, you may want to stick on for the rest of the show. So I'm just saying. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, what have you got for us this week? Boy, you sound like a whole new man now that tax season's over.
Well,
I'd like
to say I feel like a new man, but, I'm still old. Anyway, you know, this is something that has hit a lot of my clients personally, and I don't know how many of you out there listening have had this happen, but I want to give you a warning. I have had, in the last 2 months, 4 people call me personally, 4 of my clients who have gotten phone calls from somebody saying that they are from the IRS, give them a name, a badge number, and say, we are going to come and arrest you immediately if you don't pay us money.
Wow, I didn't know that you brought, I can't believe when I was in the office last week, we didn't talk about this. I didn't know you'd had 4 clients personally
4
get
clients.
This call.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I want everybody to know out there, the IRS is not going to call you. They will send you letters. If you are in trouble, they are going to send you a letter. They will not call you. They will not do that. It is a total and complete scam. Most of my people who have had it happen to are in California. So I want you to be extremely aware of this fact. And since you're talking about Social Security and older people like me, there is a tendency for them to prey on older people. Now, it hasn't been just older people that have had it to. I've actually had it to happen to one of my clients who is in his 40s. Again, some people are going to say, he's old too. But, you know, so are you, Mark. So, but
Yeah, I'm in that boat. I'm in that boat.
But, you know, he's not old. He's a professional. But he got that phone call too. Scared the heck out of him. Called me first. You know, I said, it's a scam. Got him all calmed down and everything. But if you ever get a phone call like that, 2 things. Call your CPA, call the police, report it.
Caller ID. Did they notice if there was a, did they get a phone number on the caller ID, or was it a block
phone,
number?
One of the guy actually gave him a phone number. Well, the first, one of them was up in the San Francisco area. 2 of them were actually Washington, D.C. numbers. Not a good thing, because the IRS doesn't call you from Washington, D.C. The other one was a Philadelphia. Phone number. Yeah. So again, there were 3 different, 3 different phone numbers. 1 of them back east. Well, 3 of them back east, and 1 out in the west. But they are scams. Do not let the IRS.
I was looking in the news on this too. This is the largest IRS or scam. You know, people purporting to be from the IRS. largest scam in the history of the IRS. They were thinking millions of people have been affected by this and given money erroneously.
Yeah, and that's the problem. They've given money. I mean, one client in particular was about ready to go down and transfer $5,000 through a PayPal account type of thing. It's like, no, absolutely not. This is not what happens.
Yeah, in fact, I think some of the warnings I've seen, too, is that not only will the IRS not call you, these scam artists are asking for a wire transfer or a prepaid debit card, just very unique ways that the IRS would never take that. The IRS takes a check, folks, so you can
run the check. Do not, absolutely do not fall for these scams.
Well, this is a wonderful tip this week, Brian, and I am just shocked again that we've had four clients of ours come specifically to you, even with that phone call from the IRS, from the scam artist saying they're from the IRS. Very interesting.
Yeah. So, anyway, just be aware.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, folks. That's Brian Brown, one of the partners here at Caney CPAs, helping clients nationwide. Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, folks, let's jump over to one of our other phenomenal tipsters, excellent advisor here. I've got some emails coming in here with some questions already on today's topic, so it kind of threw me off there. But again, we've got Matt Sorensen, partner at KKOS Lawyers and a regular contributor. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mark. Always a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, thank you for being on here. I know that you're very, very busy and appreciate you finding time to be with us today. How's Phoenix weather?
Oh, Phoenix is great right now. It is a little windy here. I'm sure it's not like it is in the Midwest, but it's a little windy here, which is unusual.
Yeah, we all dream of Phoenix this time of year, the spring, and such a beautiful time. Well, Matt, what you wrote a wonderful article in the blog. I read that, and I thought it was excellent. What were you going to talk about today? But I think you should at least mention your article for people to look at.
Yeah, well, I had the last two articles I wrote. I was going to actually talk about the one from 2 weeks ago. Let me just highlight the one from this week, and I can briefly talk about the one from 2 weeks ago, which actually dovetails into your article. So, the article this week was about probably one of the most trickiest rules for self-directed IRA investors in the privity transaction rules. So many self-directed IRA investors know when they're investing their retirement account that their retirement account can't do a transaction with themselves or their spouse or their kids, and they kind of know the family members that you can't involve your IRA in and conduct a transaction between your IRA and that person, and those people are listed out in the rules. But one of the more complicated ones, Mark, is what about a business partner of mine, someone I'm in a business with or someone who works for me, helps me run one of my companies? Can my IRA conduct a transaction directly with that person? And that one's a little more tricky to understand, and it even took me a couple of years, frankly, after working in the self-directed IRA industry and advising clients to fully understand how it works. But I tried to summarize it in the blog article so people know when a business partner or someone that works for them is going to be a disqualified person to their IRA.
Well, this is, a little nuance that does shock people and surprise others that wouldn't expect this. I know you and I, Matt, have talked about combining our IRAs to buy property and then realize that we could be prohibited. Yeah, we have to do it carefully.
Yeah, and there's a tricky thing to keep in mind first is disqualified persons may co-invest together. Like Mark or I would probably fall under this disqualified person as partners in certain companies. So our IRAs could not transact between each other. We could co-invest together into something, usually through an LLC where we allocate the ownership out amongst ourselves or our IRAs based on how much cash we're putting in. But let me get into this rule, though. I'll just specifically talk about it. You're right. It's a pretty nuanced rule for those, that have never heard of this and deal with their IRAs, it's an important one to understand. I know it may not apply to others, so let me just, I'll just briefly explain it. It's just a two-part analysis to understand the rule. So the first thing you want to do to determine if a business partner is disqualified to your IRA is look at any company which you or your disqualified family members own 50% or more of. So in my article, I give an example. My wife and I own a company 60%. Once we identify companies that are owned 50% or more, the next thing we look at is who is an officer, meaning, you know, president or manager or, you know, whatever. So a higher level position, who's an officer, director, highly compensated employee, or a 10% or more owner in the company. So in the example I gave, a business owned 60% by my wife and I, 40% owned by another partner, and I want to use my IRA to transact with that partner that owns 40%. Now, I would not be able to do that because that person is disqualified. First, again, we look at the company. It is owned 50% or more by disqualified persons, by my wife and I. Then we look at who in that company owned 50% or more is a 10% owner. Since this person has 40% or more, they're a 10% or more owner. They're automatically disqualified. Now, also, if this person was, say, the president of our company, they would also be a disqualified person to our IRA. Or if they were a director on the board of directors of the company, they would be a disqualified person to my wife and I's IRAs because we own 50% or more of the company. And the intent there is to basically say, we don't want people who are involved in companies you control at a high level to transact with your IRA. We just think there's too close of a business relationship already where we don't really trust that transaction, and so we're just going to limit any transactions between your IRA when you own 50% or more of a company and people involved in that company at a high level. Again, people who own 10% or more or have an officer or director or highly compensated employee position.
Well, and I think at this, I want to just interject this quickly for everybody. If you thought that didn't relate to you or that was a little too much, let me say this quickly again. You can always, and Matt, you said it a moment ago, I'll just say it again, is folks, you can partner or co-invest with your spouse, your kid, these prohibited parties, these business partners. You can co-invest together, form an LLC, and your IRA can partner with their IRA. What is important, the distinction here, is that your IRA could not loan them money or buy property from this person. That's the transact issue. So again, these very elaborate, well-designed LLCs are still an option for you with these business partners. You just have to be careful not to quote-unquote transact with them. So this is a really good definition, Matt, as to who these people are.
All right. Well, Matt, that's the rule that's in the article. If this does apply to you, you want to check out the article. It's on my website, sdirahandbook.com. The other one that was from last week, I'll just highlight briefly here, was due diligence items in making self-directed IRA investments, which really apply to all investments because the issues you want to consider when you're investing your retirement account are very similar to what you'd consider in your personal name in it. Dovetails a little bit, Mark, with your article about investing with church members or family and making sure you're properly analyzing the deal and not just the relationship.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny. On my article, I took some excerpts from a Salt Lake Tribune article on this. And for anybody out there, I think anyone in the country knows that Utah has a predominance of the Mormon faith. And this article out of Salt Lake Tribune, of course, made light of the church members on Sunday getting together in the hallway saying, hey, let's do business together. And they do it all on a handshake. Now, many of you that, no matter what Christian faith or any sort of faith that you may be in on Sundays or Saturdays or wherever, you know, you might be getting together with your congregation and someone's making a pitch. And you have to be careful, whether it's Bible study or Sunday school or wherever your religious group meets, be careful mixing business with religion. And it doesn't mean that you can't partner with these folks if they came off the street. It's so important to do that due diligence, no matter where you bump into them, in church or in the grocery store or the neighborhood. Gosh, Matt, you've seen all sorts of horror stories.
Right, yeah, no, that's something I think some people presume, oh, I know this person from church, or, oh, this is a family member of mine, so I don't really need to consider the investment, whether it's a good investment. I'll just trust in them on whatever they're telling me. And that's the pitfall that people fall into. And you still want to, you know, treat it like you treat any other investment, and don't take someone's relationship with you for granted. And you know, because there are people out there that can take advantage of you. So, but you can check the due diligence top 10 list on my blog. You know, I go over things to understanding the investments and the documents and commissions raised to get investors in, and all those issues that you want to be looking at and considering as you're investing your hard-earned money.
Yeah. Well, just a couple other notes. I want to make sure all of you know Matt Thornton's got his new IRA videos out there, so self-directed IRA strategy video series. It's very, very affordable. Gosh, it's you get plenty of hours of Matt. It is a great discount than his meeting with him face-to-face, but get some good general info. On the newsletter, you can get the link. And Matt, I guess at SDIRAhandbook.com, you can get those videos as well, right?
Correct. Yep. That's where they're at. Yep. And you can check them out. There's got a preview of them and a summary of what they are. You can check them out there.
Perfect. Hey, and we've got several emails that have come in, and I think we need to just quickly mention it. I want to be I'd talk about this just for everyone that the situation this week that happened with American Pension. We've got even some comments on the blog today about how to choose a reputable and qualified SDIRA company. And what? So I think, well, this is a great question that HNL Bill asked, and I'll phrase it here for you, Matt. But I think the first thing is, some of you that have an account with American Pension, they're an IRA custodian. We have some clients that have got accounts with them, and we ourselves, our firm, we're not shy to tell people that we've sponsored have our 401k with their company. Well, they've had some SEC problems. Their company's accounts have been frozen this week. There's a receiver taking over their accounts, and there's a hearing on May 9th. We're going to wait to see what happens there. All transactions with this IRA company are now on hold. It's very frustrating for all of us. We are in the same boat as many of you. We don't know what all the answers are yet. I know I've got several emails here regarding, Martin, can you comment? Do you know any new news? And we don't know any new news. We're trying. Matt, do you want to comment as well on any thoughts you have
sure.
on the situation?
Yeah, no, I mean, I've been working hard to get as much information as we can, and I've been corresponding with the receiver in the case. I've been waiting for her to respond, and hopefully we can get a dialogue going there. But, you know, we want to make sure that clients are able to get their accounts back operating, and, you know, and hopefully can have access to them soon and start completing transactions. And we know the next step is a lot of clients may be looking to transfer out their account, and we'll certainly be helpful in that process and going through the steps to do it and how to find the right custodian. But right now, I mean, with it's all in court. The case is totally sealed, so we don't have immediate access to it. And unfortunately, in the website that was sent out on the notice from the receiver still doesn't have the court documents posted. So, and I understand APS still is not, their phones have not been turned back on. So we're kind of in a wait and see mode, and hopefully we'll be getting more answers soon. I think we'll be communicating those out to clients as we receive it. But right now, the only information we have is some contact info for the receiver, which you can find on the web by just Googling around the receiver. It's Diane Thompson. Her name was on the notice that went out. And we really need her, and the communication we're making to her is to let her know it's important that clients can, you know, conduct transactions and fulfill ongoing transactions they're in the middle of. So that's the immediate concern we're trying to make sure, is that people can follow through on transactions they're already in the middle of so that they don't have any investment losses or lose earnest money or anything like that from the account being frozen in this temporary time period right now. But we're still waiting to hear back from them, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is really difficult. And I think H&L Bill here on the chat line asked a great question. And let's answer this one. I think this is a great general question. He says, can you talk about choosing a reputable and qualified self-directed IRA custodian? And what is your protection if that company has legal issues and it closed down, they get closed down? So speaking, talking hypothetically here without referencing it, yes. I like the way this listener phrased that. Let me make a couple comments, and Matt, probably as well. Here's the first thing. When choosing a self-directed IRA custodian, I think we've been saying this for years. When you're using a custodian, the goal is not to leave your money there and invest it with their handiwork and leave it in an account like you would at Merrill Lynch or Oppenheimer or Edward Jones. The goal is to get the money in, turn around and form an LLC, and get the money out. The people that have IRA LLCs with a custodian that gets shut down, their money's still at the IRA LLC. They're doing business as usual. It doesn't matter. The custodian could shut down for 3 months, and it's not going to affect your IRA at all because your money's already in your IRA LLC, and you're running the show. It's people that leave large bundles of cash at the custodian that are going to have more of a concern. And so you want to be cautious there. Get the money in, invest it, and get it going. But Matt, these accounts are very similar to an IRA you'd open at a bank. They are FDIC insured. Maybe comment on that, Matt, if you could.
Yeah, now presumably this is something you'd want to check with your opening a self-directed IRA account, and you're looking out is, are each of these accounts deposited separately such that we have FDIC insurance on each account? You know, you have that up to $250,000, and that which protects you against the money being taken or the bank or company failing. Now, most of your self-directed IRA custodians have that, and they do deposit them separately and hold separate accounts so that you have FDIC insurance up to the $250,000 limit. Now, if you're over $250,000, you know, what you're relying on essentially is the institution itself, their insurance, what insurance do they carry, liability insurance. You know, they could have fiduciary insurance, a fidelity bond. There's lots of other things posted. Also, there is, in the end, there is a bank or, in many cases, the company is a trust company directly or they administer for a trust company. So there's always some regulated entity in the end that is the actual custodian of the IRA. So just, for example, with American Pension Services, the actual custodian of those IRAs are First Utah Bank. And so there's First Utah Bank essentially behind that administration of American Pension Services, and the account is actually with First Utah Bank. And so then, I mean, you know, heaven forbid, but then you have their insurance and their backing as well with respect to the account. So we'll see if there is any money missing. I mean, that's part of the investigation the receiver is undertaking. And, you know, if there is money invested, what accounts does it affect? And then, you know, is the receiver able to make claims on the insurance or otherwise have the bank to, or American Pension Services themselves to use those assets to recoup anybody so there's no losses. Now, hopefully that's the case. Either there is money missing or that there is no money missing, or if there is money missing, it can be recouped by the receiver. But we just don't know yet. We're a little disappointed we can't get access to the case. I'm very anxious to read the court's orders and the application and stuff from the SEC. All I know is there's been a change in the judge. There's a judge that had a relationship with one of the attorneys that had to recuse themselves, so there was a new judge assigned yesterday. But regardless of who the judge is, we still can't get access to the case. So, but as a general nature, what I just say is I think it's important to obviously get a good feel for the custodian, see how long they've been in business, get a, you know, good feel for the reputation. And, you know, but sometimes even take like a case client like APS, who's in business for 30 years, you know, they're good at answering their phone and being responsive to clients and handling transactions. It's sometimes you just never know what happens. But then also maybe inquiring as to their insurance, their licensing structure, I think is helpful in understanding your self-directed IRA custodian and their, how they operate and how you're protected in the event there is a failure at the company.
Yeah, and HNLB Bill here on the chat line says, so glad we have checkbook control and glad to have Matt on our side working the case. What about me? I thought I was going to help too. Anyway, so. No, I'm glad we have Matt here on the case too. Many of you didn't know Matt used to be a prosecutor for the Attorney General of Utah back in the day, and so Matt knows his way around the courtroom. He's put bad guys away.
So, yeah, I hope I don't have to go to court on this. I mean, heaven forbid, there's a lot of money missing, but hopefully something will be resolved quickly, and we won't have to get to that stage, but you never know.
Yeah, you bet. Well, a couple other questions here on the chat line. Let's hit these real quick before we bring on our special guest. One other quick one from Kim said, does Mark Kohler's office set up LLCs for self-directed IRAs, or can you recommend someone that does that? Well, Kim, thank you for asking. Yes, we do, and we've been doing it for 10 years. With a question like that, you probably are a newer listener to the show, so we're glad to have you. We do. We give you a comfort letter, which is really a fancy term of saying that we give you a list of what you can and can't do with the LLC, and if you get audited or have any problems, we stand behind it and we'll pay the bill if there's a problem. So as long as you follow the rules we give you, we'll stand and give you great advice on the LLC. So we're there for you. So, Kim, give us a buzz. Just call the main office. There was another question here from Jim. Jim Shute, a great client and regular listener, says, Mark, my son turns 18 in June. I've been paying him from my LLC in years past. Can I still pay him before he turns 18 and have him be exempt from taxes up to $6,100, or does the IRS consider him 18 for the entire year? Okay, now here's the trick. This is important for everybody to hear. Before your son or daughter turns 18, so while they're 17 and younger, issue is, Jim, is that before they turn 18, you don't have to withhold SUTA, FICA, or workers' comp. That's why we're worried about them turning 18. At the end of the year, if they have combined income throughout the year of over $6,250 this year, that's their standard deduction, then they're going to have to file a tax return and pay some taxes. So it's what's their overall income in any given year? Is it more than $6,250, which will be adjusted for inflation in future years? So they're two different issues. The reason why I want you to pay your son out of your LLC before he turns 18 is so that you don't have to withhold any of that payroll crap. That's the goal. So pay him as much as you want. You could pay him more than $6,250 if you wanted. You just don't have to withhold anything. Put it in his college savings account for the fall. But at the end of the year, he is going to have to pay taxes on anything over $6,250. And he's going to be in a lower bracket than you anyway, Jim. So maybe be thinking about that. Great questions on the chat line. I don't see anything else here that we haven't already covered. So I want to say thank you for the active listeners here on our show, and especially say thank you to Matt Sorensen, who joins us every 2 to 3 weeks as a regular contributor, and his new book against the SDIRA handbook or self-directed IRA handbook is fantastic. I talked about it today, Matt, at the convention out here in Kansas. People are getting the word. So appreciate you coming on the show, Matt.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Well, thank you. And again, the listeners here are glad they've got you on their side. So I'm glad you're here, Matt.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to hear too. All right, well, folks, we're going to move over to our special guest here, and I'm sorry we got distracted there. We have had Randy Lubke on our show several times before. He's a licensed financial advisor. He's a licensed mortgage officer, a licensed broker, and a license to sell insurance. He has been giving workshops around the country on the tactics, should I say, and the strategies regarding Social Security. And it's not a sexy topic. If you thought dressing up taxes was hard, you ought to try giving a workshop on Social Security. So my heart goes out to this guy. I love him. He's wonderful. We're going to make a special announcement someday soon of a project Randy and I are working on together. But until then, we get him here on our show for a good half hour or so. It was less than a half hour now. But Randy, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, how are you doing today?
Well, I am great, and thank you for, I'm sorry we got distracted on that little APS, self-directed IRA custodian issue. I know you're aware of it, too, and just felt we needed to address that for some of our clients that are on the show and listening in today.
Well, I think it was a really valuable conversation, and for your benefit and maybe for the benefit of some of your listeners, I've been through that once before myself with another custodian about 20 years ago. It was a custodian out of Denver. And everything you guys are saying was 100% correct. You know, the cash I had in the account was protected and eventually returned to me. And I was dealing in trustees at the time. And so it didn't stop my trustee business at all. And, you know, I could still collect money and, you know, that really wasn't an issue. So it did work out. And hopefully that's how it'll work out for anybody that participates with these guys as well.
Well, that's comforting news. And thanks for sharing that. I know that you've worked with many custodians throughout the country as a financial advisor as well. So that FDIC insurance is where that's what banks are for. You know, it's why we bailed them out. You know, geez, we're paying taxes for this, so we might as well get some benefit. Well, Randy, Social Security, man.
It's really sexy, Mark. It's really sexy.
It is sexy, right?
Now, I
warned the listeners at the beginning of the show, do not cut out, do not hang up. This is going to be a great, very informative a few minutes we're here. We're going to have hyper-focused on Social Security. And I know there's, like I said earlier, anybody over age 50, you've got to be paying attention. There are tricks and tactics. You may think, oh, when I turn a certain age, a check just shows up in the mail. But Randy, it's not that simple. There's some things that people need to be thinking about, and that's one of the first questions I had for you. If you are coming up on retirement age, what are some things that you could be doing now to be careful, making sure that you're going to maximize what you do get in Social Security, and just kind of some pre-planning strategies? Any tips you'd give out?
Sure. Okay, so the first thing, I guess, would be to understand what the maximum earnings limit is in terms of contributing to Social Security. And basically what that means is for the first dollar you earn, you're putting into the pot. You're contributing to Social Security through FICA taxes. And you contribute and you continue to make those contributions until you make $117,000 in 2014. That would be the cutoff point. And during that $117,000 earn up, if you will, between you and your employer, or if you're self-employed, you're putting in 15.3% of your income towards Social Security. It's a big number.
Yeah. So that's a great point. We all are contributing to Social Security if we're self-employed through self-employment tax or through a W-2 wage. We don't need to go down the S-Corp discussion today, but so we're all contributing to Social Security. How much, Randy, do we know that we're going to get? I know that a lot of people say, well, I've been paying in my whole freaking life. How much Social Security am I really going to get? Can't we figure that out by going to some calculator or website?
Yeah. Actually, the Social Security Administration maintains a website of everyone's earnings record. It's the website address, by the way, is socialsecurity.org. Anybody can go there anytime. You have to answer a bunch of security questions to make sure that, you know, the website knows it's you. By the way, the security questions are very specific. It used to be, you know, pretty easy. They would ask for, like, of course, your social, and they'd ask where you live and what your mother's maiden name, and they'd let you in. But now they're asking more specific questions, and if you get them wrong, you'll actually be locked out of the site for a few hours up to a few weeks, depending on what happens. So the information is there, and it's available, and everybody should get it and see, for a couple reasons. One, just to find out what you contributed to the system, but two, just to make sure that they didn't forget any years, right? I mean, Social Security has to receive that information from your employer, and heaven knows, government does make mistakes, right?
Well, isn't there a law of diminishing returns? Like, aren't me and Warren Buffett going to get the same Social Security, even if he's put in a lot more over the years?
Yes and no. Remember, you and Warren Buffett are going to put in the maximum Social Security up to $117,000 this year. So in that regard, whether you're making $1 billion a year or you're making $117,000, you're going to both contribute the same amount of money. And the benefit,
Good point.
And the benefits you're going to receive will be based on essentially the same formula as well. What does vary, though, coming out the other side is whether how much of that benefit you'll receive that will actually be taxed. A lot of people don't realize that Social Security benefits aren't necessarily taxed as part of your income.
Wow. Well, let's stick with that topic for a minute. So let's say Warren Buffett worked 20 years and I worked 20 years and we both made over at least $117,000 a year, which is the number now. Of course, it's been adjusted for inflation. But let's say that we both made the same amount at that low level for the last 20 years, then we're obviously going to get the same amount in retirement. That would be fair to say, right?
It would be so fair to say. And go ahead.
Okay. So let's say I've worked for 20, 25, before we come to this taxability issue, let's say I've worked for 20 years and I'm maybe even self-employed, which is another topic too, but my beautiful wife, Jennifer, she has not had a day job for the last 5-10 years. She's been raising the kids. We've been grateful that that's one of the things we've worked towards, and I work a lot of hours to help her do that. But what happens, could she go in and I put her on payroll in my company now to help get her Social Security level up? Is there like a point where I should pay her for 2 years and I'm just going to get enough, or should I pay her for 5 years or 10? Like, isn't there a point where you're like, Mark, don't do more than this because you're really not going to see the benefit. You want to at least do this much. Is there kind of a perfect – do you know what I'm asking here? Is there a good amount of years that you should have, and then really after that, you're not going to get much more bang for your buck?
Yeah, that's a great question. And basically, you're asking about what's the rate of return based on my contribution into the plan, and we can actually calculate that. But to understand it, I gotta go a little deep here. But it's really good information to understand. We'll go deep. So for anybody to qualify for Social Security benefits, you have to work 10 quarters. 40 quarters, which is typically 10 years of work. The 40 quarters don't have to be consecutive. So I could work a couple years, take off a few years, and come back and work a few more years. But I have to have the 40 quarters before I'm eligible for benefits. That's the first step. The second step is...
Okay, so 10 years. I got to work at least 10 years of payroll.
Yeah, 40 quarters. 40 quarters.
Okay, got it.
Okay. The second thing is, the way they calculate, Social Security calculates your benefits, is they're going to look over your entire working career from maybe when you're 18 years old until you stop working, and they're going to take the top 35 highest earning years and use that in their calculation. So years where you had zeros, they can be thrown out. Or years where you had lower income, period, they can be thrown out. They're always going to take the top 35 years over your entire working career.
Okay, or top 10 if I only worked 10.
Or top 10, yeah. And if you did that, you would have 10 working years plus, 25 zeros, if you will. Because you still, in the calculation, to determine the value we're looking for is called the primary insurance amount, or the PIA. They use a lot of acronyms.
Okay.
The primary insurance amount is always based on 35 years. So if you only work 10, you're eligible for benefits, but you'd have 25 years of zeros added to the formula.
Okay, the reason why I bring this up again is kind of a pre-planning point. If I'm in my 50s and my spouse or I haven't paid in a lot, you may want to start doing some of these calculations and pay in a little bit, because there is a decent return at the front end of this equation, right?
Well, yeah, it's actually it's quite a remarkable return, really. Especially, this is insurance. This isn't like a 401k where if you don't use it all up, it gets passed down to your heirs. It's made for you. But that being said, most people are going to live 85, 90 years old, and they're going to potentially be receiving retirement benefits from Social Security for 20, 25, 30 years. And what I see all day long is just middle average earning couples taking in about $1.5 million of benefits over their lifetime. It's a lot of money.
Wow. Okay. All right. So if this is okay, I'll just go back to this, unless you want to add anything else. So I'm paying in. We're all paying in. This equation occurs. And then I start to receive benefits. You're saying some of it may not be taxable. Tell us why.
Okay. And then I want to circle back to this PIA calculation, but the reason is that some of it is not, well, frankly, it starts out with all of it being untaxable, and then depending on how much other income you earn, portions of it can be taxed. And, that's actually relatively new to Social Security. It used to be all tax-free, but part of the revamping of Social Security a few years back to help sustain it, which is another thing we should talk about, will it be there for you and our kids and so on? But as a way of sustaining it, they tax it depending on how much money you make. So going back to you and Warren Buffett again, right?
Yeah.
So Warren Buffett, and you will too for all intents and purposes, will be taxed on 85% of the Social Security benefits you receive. If you think about that, if Warren Buffett's making $1 billion a year or you're making, say, $100,000 a year, both of you will get 15% of that income from Social Security income tax-free.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's a big deal because if you think about it, if tax-free money really means, depending on your tax bracket, that the dollar you're receiving might be worth $1.20 or $1.30 or $1.40. And, surely for a billionaire it doesn't really matter, but for somebody that's making $100,000 a year, that does matter. It's significant.
Yeah. No, it does. Well, and I didn't say this earlier, and I need to say it now. This is a topic that you teach hours of education on, and the website, socialsecurity.org or ssa.gov, has a copious amount of information, folks. And so if you're finding this intriguing and you want to learn more, I'll mention it now. Those sites are helpful, and I know Randy's got a lot of information on his site and is teaching classes on this. So we won't be able to go in too in-depth, but one of the other questions I got via email in anticipation of the show, one of our listeners asked, what are the rules on when I can start taking Social Security and when I shouldn't work or should work? Like, it was a kind of elaborate question, so I'm trying to distill it down here. Is that some people are afraid to get a job because it might affect their Social Security. What's the mystery there?
Oh, well, okay. So when you can claim benefits depends on a variety of things, but the basic formula is most people are eligible to start claiming benefits as early as age 62, and if they claim the benefits at the early age, they're going to reduce the actual benefit that you would otherwise be entitled to if you waited to the full retirement age. It's called FRA. And full retirement age is determined by when you're born, so that's a variable as well. Today, for most people, full retirement age is 66 years old. So at 66, I would get a full benefit. If I took it at 62, I'd get a reduced benefit. And then conversely, if I didn't take it at 66 and waited till I was 70, they would add to the benefit quite a bit, actually. They add 8% for every year. So if I can delay taking benefits from 66 to 70, I'll receive 32% more income, and I'll receive that income for the rest of my life. It's a big add-on.
Wow. Now, you've mentioned this on our show before, that people that are getting close to retirement age need to try to, and this is one of the topics today, is maybe look at some other strategies to make ends meet and build a little retirement. Because the longer you can delay Social Security, the more you're going to get. And I was just blown away by that when I learned that from you.
Yeah. In fact, I know we're coming up on time here, and I want to get into one specific strategy that's pretty interesting.
And we'll
do that. But I want to finish the answer to your last question, which is once you turn full retirement age, you can work and earn as much money as you want, and they won't reduce your benefits a dime.
Once
somebody turns 66 years old today, I can still be earning $100,000 a year, and I'll get my full Social Security benefits, and I won't have that benefit reduced because of earnings. So that's what I think they're really asking.
Now, before I turn 66, if I do work and I've started to take Social Security, is that going to affect my Social Security benefits?
It will. Yeah, they have an earnings limit there as well. And basically, if you earn over $34,000 in modified adjusted gross income, they're going to reduce your benefit to the point where they take it away. So even though you'll get it, they'll take it away the following year. And then they actually give it back to you again, by the way, when you turn full retirement age. So they said, look, you took it early, you got it. But we're going to take it away now from you the following year, and then when you turn full retirement age over a period of time, we'll give it back to you. So you never really lose it. But if you think about it, if you didn't need the money, why would you want to take a benefit that they're just going to take away from you the following year? And you're also going to be subject to that the reduced benefit, and that reduced benefit will affect you the rest of your life. It doesn't go away. So it generally
is
a smart thing.
This is really important. So what you're saying is if you're worried about making too much and affecting Social Security, that should be a red alert that maybe it is okay, keep working, but don't take the Social Security. Punt. Send it into the next period, and you're going to get much, much more later for not being greedy and trying to grab as soon as you can.
That's right. And that's why it's so important to go through these strategies with the specific circumstances that that are relative to that person. What's their earnings record? What's their full retirement age? What's their primary insurance amount? What's their ability or desire to continue to work? And we plan these strategies out, because when you combine, especially with couples, when you combine what you could pay to a husband or pay to a wife, or even a divorced spouse or a widow, the strategies get pretty involved, and they're really. This is why I say it's sexy, Mark. This is exciting stuff.
I love it. Now, okay, one other question. And I know you've got a topic on it. What about the self-employed? I mean, we keep talking about people that have a job and they're working, but the self-employed. How does this play into it when I have a small business?
The self-employed actually have more options, of course, than an employee. And if you think about it this way, a husband and a wife that have been married, and they've been married 30 years, right? And they both work in the same business, so both of them are subject to that that earnings cap. So both of them are going to be, if they're both taking payroll or both taking salary, they're going to end up paying that 15.3% up to $117,000 in 2014. And the fact of the matter is that the spouse will be entitled to a spousal benefit, even if, even if the wife, in that example, never paid a dime into Social Security, she'd still be entitled to a spousal benefit. So in many circumstances with self-employed, it's much better to max out the husband and to not pay the spouse anything. You let her get a zero, because she'll get a spousal benefit that's going to be the same whether she's paying into it or not. It doesn't matter. So self-employed people especially need to look at these specific strategies to see what's really best for them, or they really would be wasting their money.
Well, and that is a sole proprietor situation, not an S-corp strategy. Am I right?
Well, I think it'd be for both, because again, I'm not talking about trying to create income to put into a retirement plan with an S-corp strategy. I'm just saying, if I have one spouse, and that spouse is going to max out at $117,000, and so I don't have to pay the other one anything, and it'll just come through in the form of K-1 distributions, dividends, that might be a better strategy than both of them paying into Social Security. It might be.
Yeah. Gosh, fascinating. Okay, now you said, too, that you had another point you wanted to make, too.
Well, all right, we got 6 minutes, so I'm just going to give you, the 30,000-foot view of the strategy called a CINCL.
Okay.
Which stands for claim it now and claim it later, right? And it's an advanced strategy. It's made generally for couples, right? And the idea is that if I have two spouses that have paid into Social Security, each one of them has this earnings record that I was talking about, right? They each paid in, each have an earnings record, and so each one would be entitled to a benefit earned on their own, but they'd also be entitled to a benefit as a spouse, okay? So the claim it now, claim it later strategy works like this. And again, to keep it simple. Oh, and by the way, because I know I'm going to talk too fast here, this is on my what I'm going to describe. The CINCL is on my blog, which is dedicated to Social Security. It's called SocialSecuritySmart.com. And so they can go there and they can read this. Plus, I got a bazillion other articles and a lot of good information at that website. In fact, rather than try and fly through this because they only got 5 minutes, go there, read the article on the CINCL, and then just shoot me some questions about it. But it's a really great strategy where basically it allows one spouse to claim some benefits while they're still working, allow the other spouse to claim benefits as well, and then allow that working spouse to delay their benefits so at age 70 they can actually get a larger benefit, which goes on for the rest of their life. And then when that larger benefit wage earner were to pass away, that larger benefit passes on directly to the other spouse. So it's a really cool strategy. You got to see the numbers, and it's too much to go through in 3 minutes, so go to the website.
Well, and I can see what you're saying, though, that it's like if you are married, and not everybody is, I understand that, and I know some of you are widows out there or have never been married, but the point is it sounds like it's a wonderful way to kind of leverage each other's Social Security and the timing. So
If you've been married for 10 years and divorced and you're not remarried, you still are entitled to spousal benefits.
Okay, now I'm going to hit just in our last couple minutes here, and I know no way could we do this justice, but at least throw out a few thoughts for people to research and study more. Randy, when you meet with people that are 50 years or older and are really scared to death, they're like, we really don't have a retirement to speak of. I'm 45 right now. Like 5 years from now, I'm going to be, looking down the barrel at what have I got for retirement. We all go, anticipate that scary day. What can people do to try to quickly come up with some sort of retirement strategy when they're up against the wall like that? What suggestions and what do you say to people when you meet them in that very dire circumstance?
Well, dire is dire, so I guess the first thing is just to make sure that they at least have their current expenses, their P&L, their expenses and income under control, because it doesn't do any good to continue to lose money every year. You gotta be able to live within your means no matter what happens. Again, if they're in a dire situation, dire may remain dire, but what I do find is that we can certainly take what benefits they are entitled to and maximize those. That I know we can do. And just going to the Social Security office and applying for benefits, they're actually not allowed to help you apply these specific strategies or tell you about the specific strategies. Their job is really just to help you get the maximum benefits you'd be allowed to get today. And that's a big difference, because if we can do some of these things and wait a little bit, it can make a big difference over their lifetime. And that's what we're trying to do.
Using the word dire, of course, is dramatic, but I when I meet with clients in the same situation, we talk about trying to leverage their time, their credit, family money as well to get into real estate or investments, or trying to put money away and adjusting their cost of living. I've had a lot of clients that sell their home and hit the open road and do some other work camping strategies to try to reduce costs and living and see the country and really find some happiness. But, okay, Randy, in our last minute here, tell people how they can get a hold of you, again, and repeat your website on the Social Security and Retirement Strategy.
Okay, so a couple things. First of all, I'm going to give you my email this time, which is randy@lifetimeparadigm.com. So Lifetime, LIFETIME. Paradigm, PARADIGM.com, lifetimeparadigm.com. And if anybody is interested, send an email to me, say Social Security in the subject, and I'll respond back and I'll give them a Social Security quick reference guide, which is going to have a 99% of the stuff we're talking about and more. So I'll email that back in with a nice little PDF. And then go to my website, lifetimeparadigm.com or socialsecuritysmart.com.
I love it. SocialSecuritySmart.com. Folks, Randy loves me. Regular guest. Randy, thanks for having us and being with us today. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks again, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity. Have a great week, okay?
You too. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We'll see you next week for another Mark Kohler Show at 11 a.m. Pacific.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.